What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Ford 52 podcast. I'm your host, Chris Jones, and today we have a really special episode. We have two entrepreneurs with us. We have back again the Fountain Ford CEO and founder, Stephen Gergella.
Hi, Chris.
And then we have Austin Evans, who's another entrepreneur.
Hey, guys, how are you?
And what we're going to look at today is two different entrepreneurial paths and two different levels of risk and what it's like, you know, on each of those paths.
Yeah, so this episode should be pretty much all micro rant based and educational for those out there that might need to open up their eyes to the fact that there are multiple entrepreneurial paths, and we're going to talk about Austin's path, and we're going to talk about my path, and we're going to talk about the fact that both are completely okay, but both have different levels of risk. So first of all, Austin, tell us a little bit about what you're working on right now.
Okay, great. Yeah, so right now my partner and I are building a software platform for the maritime industry. So we noticed a big gap there where companies are still using really archaic processes to schedule their employees into the manifest for the boats. And so we're automating that process and creating a marketplace for out-of-work employees to come and find positions.
Okay, and so with that, Austin's trying to solve a problem. Okay, just like I was trying to solve a problem, but Austin's is extremely specific and it has a high risk, not only because of the fact that Austin is 37 years old, correct, married, two kids. Yep. Okay, and so let's talk about the fact that you're also going after a very competitive space, mm-hmm, right? And so though you're bringing, just to use your words correctly from earlier, you're bringing in something that isn't necessarily new to the world, but it's underutilized in your industry.
Correct.
Okay. So I want to talk about the fact that, so go through some of the inherent risks that you have right now, and then I'll kind of talk about, you know, how mine are different.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the risks involved in what we're doing, obviously is market uptake. Will markets come, and use this software effectively? And so where we started was we white labeled a product and we took it around and roadshowed it to a bunch of people. For those of you who don't know what white labeling means, it means that we bought the rights to resell somebody else's product with our name on it. So we took that around, showed it to some people. They told us what was wrong with it. We went back to the drawing board and said, there's no way this product's ever going to meet the market needs. So let's go and build our own. So when we talk about risk in the market, I'm looking at it from an investor's standpoint. If I need people to invest in my opportunity, my venture, I need to de-risk that for them. So I have to do things that take it from a wild hair idea in my brain that I think is going to work and I'm passionate about, and de-risk it by validating and verifying to them that this is in fact a specific need that will make money. So we've gone through several exercises to do that.
And I think added to that, and so you do know that at this point you have some letter of intent from some companies. You know you have a viable product. Talk about the risk right now with, on the family side, the fact that you are the guy, it's you and your partner, and you know that you can make this happen. You're a believer in it. But there is a roadblock right now, and I want you to talk about that roadblock. And then when you're done talking about that, I want to explain to the listeners about how my approach was much lower risk, probably, as you had said, probably because of age and timing.
Correct.
Yep. And so I want you to talk about yours, and so we can give the listeners that almost that two different views of still trying to be an entrepreneur, trying to make something great happen, trying to solve problems. But talk about right now. So you have a pathway. You're trying to go after some venture capital money, but there's another piece to the puzzle.
Yeah. So that other piece is the fact that I'm 37 years old. I've been in the oil and gas space for 10 years now, and you know my earning potential is quite high. And so going into an entrepreneurial venture like this, there's obviously the understanding that I'm going to have to live on less for a little while until things take off. But the question is how less, and you know, how much can I get away with using these investors' money to pay myself? And so some investors are completely hands down question, they say, if you're not doing this full time, you know, we don't want to get involved. And I completely understand that. But what I explain to them is, I'm married, I have two kids, and I've got a lot of responsibilities. And if I was to walk away from my 9-to-5 job right now and pour myself 100% into this, there is only so much runway that I can cover on my own before I'm failing my family and putting their well-being at risk. And so if I'm willing to take that kind of a risk with my own family, I explained to the investors, you know, how do you think I'm going to treat your money if I'm willing to treat that my money that way? And so by showing that I'm being a little bit more conservative in my path, I'm letting them know that I'll be more conservative with the way that I spend their money.
Now we're going to go to the opposite side. So the opposite side, I get to Texas in 2010. I've got $1,200 to my name. I have a job. It's a low paying job, but my responsibilities are extremely low. I'm 21 years old. I can pretty much do whatever. So my pathway was, I'm going to do, and I want to be clear, I didn't really know, I didn't have a plan, right? But I just started saving money. So I had $1,200, then I had $1,600, then I had $2,500, then I had $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000. And what I tried to do is I tried to just earn myself opportunity along the way. Then all of a sudden, once the businesses started to get bigger and bigger, as I was serving clients, trying to help with, you know, marketing, advertising, etc., then what I did was is I started to invest my money. So it's a totally different path. But then what I did was is I took big chunks of my capital and I invested it in real estate, right? So I'm still taking these big risks because I have as a conservative spender, I have all this money that I've worked so hard for. And I see it as, you know, I come from Wisconsin. You know, if you have $1 million in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, you have it made. I mean, you have it absolutely made, right? And so, well, I said, okay, you know, let's just say when I got to the hundreds of thousands of dollars, well, I have hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, I've done it. Like I can go back to point right now and I can pretty much do whatever I want. You know, I'm in my mid 20s. I have hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why keep going? Right. But then you think about the entrepreneurial spirit. What it is you, I'm not going to have a boss. I don't want a boss. Right. I want to be able to control and navigate. Right. Which is a truth. Referencing Gary Vee, he talks about like a true entrepreneur needs to be, right. Like a need to be, it's a necessity thing. Right. So I sit there and it's like, well, these dopes are making money in real estate or making money over here. So then all of a sudden I took my $300 of my $400,000 that I had and I immediately put it into real estate, right? And so now all of a sudden I'm kind of over leveraged, right? I have $100,000 left, but if something goes wrong with Fountain Forward or something happens here or there, I'm stuck, right? So totally different risk profile between you and between me. And I think what's interesting is because of how polarized entrepreneurship has become in 2019, people are not thinking about the fact that there are two totally different fucking paths. There's probably 1,000 different paths, but these are two completely different paths, and both of them can end up in extreme success, obviously depending on what you define as success, but let's just talk about a successful business, right? There's totally different risk profiles,
yeah,
right? And yours, like, let's just talk about my business, Fountain Forward does not have some sort of scale plan to go to 300 million people. Newsflash. I have a really good product, but I fly by the seat of my pants with my plan. And that's why I've hired a good team to help us get to a better plan, right? This is not something that's like but you, Austin, have a very structured plan because it seems like something that can scale pretty quick. It seems like it could be very successful, and you're going to need that because you're going after someone's money.
Correct. And so as part of that, you know, personally, to go back to what you said about Gary Vee, you know, to be an entrepreneur is a calling. And I really buy into what he says about it being about the journey and not about the money, right? I do this because it's fun. And then there's this old quote about true entrepreneurs are the guys that'll work 100 hours a week so they don't have to work 40. And that's what I do. You know, I go to my 9-to-5, I do my work, I make sure that I'm not leaving them empty-handed and not, you know, taking the focus off of that while I'm there. Then I go back to my office at my house. You know, I kiss my kids goodnight and lock myself in my office until 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, grinding, you know, LinkedIn, reaching out, talking to people on the phone, sending cold emails, trying to get these people to get involved. But yeah, no, as part of what you said about the pathway, because we're looking at this as a you know, multi-million dollar organization, we're trying to build this up to, you know, $50, $60 million in annual recurring revenue. I have to have a plan. And so I've got cash flow projections that go out for 6 years. You know, I've got pro formas that show what the EBITDA is. If anybody knows what the EBITDA is, but I go through all these technical financial terms so that when I present these to the guys who I'm asking for money for, they can see exactly where I plan to spend, exactly when I plan to hire the next hire, exactly when I plan to hire assistant, exactly when I need to scale from 3 to 7 sales guys. And so I have all that out there, so it shows when the need for money will come in. And so when I go out and talk to them, I'm asking for amount of money that'll get me to that 18-month point. But at month 9, 10, 11, I'm going to have to start doing this all over again to try and go out and raise, you know, 3 times that so that we can scale globally and we can start putting salespeople in China and Istanbul and North Africa.
So I'm going to touch on something very important here, and I want everybody to listen extremely closely. I'm 30 now. Austin's 37. Until 8 months ago, I had never put together projections for Fountain Forward. Ever. Okay. So for 6.5 years, I was running my business purely by enthusiastically finding ways to solve problems and put money into my bank account. And I did it completely by the seat of my pants. So if you think for a second that you have to have that structure, you don't necessarily unless your pathway determines that you need to have that. And Austin's absolutely does. When you're getting in, when you're working with massive companies like that and they need to see things, and let's put the private equity money on the side, right? Because as soon as you discuss having anything on the private equity side, the due diligence side, they're going to find out if you have a plan. If you can't just sell your way through it, right? You have to have your pro forma. You have to understand how much cash is going to have to go in, when they can actually get their cash back, what type of returns they're going to get. If you took, you were talking about this would be your first round of funding.
Yep.
Right. If you ended up taking a second round, how are they going to get diluted? How are things going to happen? Who's going to be in charge? You know, what's your history? Why should I trust you? Etc. Right. So it's a good lesson for everybody to realize that, like, now, you know, our business being $2 million, we have to have projections now. We have to start thinking about offering different things for our employees. Like, there's a maturation process that you can go through. And Austin, with having, you know, more years of experience underneath his belt, he may not have a well-oiled machine right now. But what's interesting is he has the setup so that if he does, in fact, reach his goals, it will be oiled very quickly and it will hit cash flow and scale extremely quickly. So just thoughts from you, Austin, on how I kind of explain the two different risk profiles that attach to the pathway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I talked with you earlier about what I would do if I was in my 20s, right? I would buy the cheapest apartment in Houston, I would get the cheapest car, and I would put every bit of money I had into this, and I could probably get the software developed inside of a year with the kind of cash that I'd be saving by doing those things. But you fast forward till you're 36 years old and you're used to making, you know, a pretty decent salary, and you've bought things, and those aren't things that you can unload. You know, you've got these responsibilities. And so in order to make this company successful, I have to know, right? I have to have at least an 80-90% amount of certainty that the steps that I'm taking are going to lead to rapid revenue generation, not necessarily cash flow positive, not necessarily, you know, we're making more than we're spending, but I have to know that within 3 months of me having a product delivered to the market, we're going to have 3 or 4 clients paying for this, so that when I do have to go out and get that second round of financing, those companies will be able to see that and be able to actually assign a value to my company.
And for all you fuckers out there that are saying to yourselves, he has to drop everything and go for it 1,000,000,000% and sell all the cars and do all the things, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to be clear. You probably haven't lived a life with a wife and 2 kids. So you need to realize the fact that I see Austin laughing on the other side of the mic here, that all sounds really good. Go do it. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean that it hasn't been done before, because you get these glorified stories of he dropped everything and he did this and it was so great, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, okay, great. This is a sweet fucking story. Let me know where I can find this in fiction inside of the local Barnes & Noble, right? I'm not saying that it hasn't been done, but how much stress are you going to put on your wife? How much stress are you going to put on your kids? How much stress are you going to put on yourself?
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing, is the kids, right? And so, you know, going through this journey over the last let's say 8 months where it's really spun up and spun out of control, time-wise. You know, yeah, my family has had to make some concessions, especially when it comes to my time with them.
For sure.
You know, I'm really focused on, you know, I like to try and take my wife out to lunch once a week. It's something that we just started trying to put on the schedule. I try and spend time with my kids from about the time I get home until the time I get to bed, which they get to bed, which is about an hour and a half. I want 100% FaceTime with them. I want to be able to talk with them. But after that, yeah, I'm off in my office, you know, just grinding. And, you know, my wife sometimes complains that she feels like she hadn't seen me in a week. And when I get that message from her, I know it's time to pull back for a day. And so I think it's really important just for people to, like, think about the two different types of entrepreneurs there are. You know, when you're young and you have no, you know, relationships that need that kind of constant touch, it's really easy to just go, like, head first, dive in deep and go as fast as you can. When you're a little bit older like me, you've got these other responsibilities, and the balancing act is crucial. And one thing that not a lot of entrepreneurs will talk to you about, which I'd like to get your opinion on, Stephen, is burnout, right? I mean, I was telling Chris earlier, like 4 days ago, like I had this thought creep up in the back of my head, like I'm ready to shut it down. And it wasn't really that I'm ready to shut it down. It was just that I've been burning the candle at both ends for 6 weeks now. And you just hit that time where you get frustrated. You have a call with a VC who is completely stoked on your idea and wants to set up an in-person meeting, wants to fly down from Boulder to meet you, right? Top of the world. Then the next day you go to coffee with an angel investor, which for those of you who don't know is just an individual who invests money in companies. And that angel investor, who you would think would be a much easier sell, just tears your slide deck to pieces, tells you everything that's wrong with it, tells you everything they don't like. And so you go from the highest high to the lowest low in a 12-hour period of time. That could be a beating on anybody's psyche. But what you have to do is you have to remember, and I wear this bracelet, it says hustle, believe, patience, and legacy. And these are the things that I'm trying to create. And so I got to remember to be humble and be teachable, which I think Steven spoke to a couple weeks ago. I have to remember to be gracious. So I have stickers that say gratitude over everything that I carry around with me. They're in my wallet. They're on my notepads. They're on my computer so that I can remember to be grateful for just the experience to be able to do this, because not many people have that ability. Not people find an idea that they think. But one of the things that I like to show people is people always thought there were two ways to start a business, right? You're either really young, you start it when you don't have any responsibility, and you grind, the kind of the Zuckerberg effect, right? And then there's this other side of things where people work in the corporate world until they're 50, 55 years old, and they're forced to retire and take a package. And now all of a sudden they're sitting on several hundred thousand dollars. They take that and they go create a company when they're 50, right? And then they're grinding until they're 70 to make that company something they can retire off of. And I looked at those two and was like, I don't want to do either of those. I want to do it now. I want to do it in my mid-30s when I have all the responsibility in the world, all the weight on my shoulders. And I just want to tell people that it is possible to do that. But it does take some concession. It does take focus and grind and the ability to just, you know, manage 18 balls in the air at one time. So one of the things people talk about is stress and eustress. Eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, is an idea that there's an optimal amount of stress that you can put on yourself for optimal efficiency in your life. And so by just working a 9-to-5 job, that may not be enough stress for you to be as effective as you can. But I've noticed over the last few weeks, by adding this additional stress of working these extra 5 or 6 hours every night when I get home, I'm more productive in my day job. And so don't be afraid that, you know, your boss is gonna realize what you're doing and fire you. You just have to be able to manage expectations correctly, be open and honest with everybody, and people will support you. In fact, my boss supports me, and he's actually asked me to send his slide deck over to his father-in-law. So, you know, it's great what honesty will get you in this life.
So it sounded like you wanted me to address this burnout thing.
Yeah, I want to hear your point of view on it.
It's a current topic. So the first thing I want to say about the burnout thing is this. I think that the amount of content that I've consumed over the last 9 years has done a disservice to my perception of what burnout really feels like. Okay, so I have consumed so much over the last 9 years that I think I've seen what I believe to be success, or what I believe to be a businessman or a businesswoman, and that's done a disservice to me. Okay, and this is my personal opinion. Okay, so I struggle. I have a massive struggle with my own mental health, and the more I consume, the more I create perceptions of somebody's environment, and the majority of the time I'm applying it to myself. It's a proven loser, and I still do it, okay? So it has become a game of making sure I'm continuously getting better, getting educated, but trying not to apply that anybody's individual scenario could be applied to mine, because it can't. So burnout, the one thing that I know for sure right now after going through the last 3 years, so for those that don't know, I was a previous partner in another agency. Fountain Forward has been around for the last 7+ years or so, almost 8 years. But I was part of another agency for about a 4-year time period, and that's where I made a lot of my wealth. And now that I've focused just on Fountain Forward, at least over the last 3 years, we've had exponential growth. And what I've, the one thing that I'm confident in with regards to the burnout thing is as long as I treat my customers well, I give them a product that they need, and I'm honest about my mistakes, we are going to continue to grow. Here's the problem. I now have created something. I can lose shit now. I have families with children. I have employees that have children. And I don't know how to handle that. Other people would. I take it very personally. I'm a very sensitive person. So the burnout for me right now is the weight, because I'm failing some of my employees, I'm failing some of my team members, some vendors. I had a conversation this morning at 9:30, 7:30 West Coast time. He got up early, and I discussed him making sure his expectations of me were clear because I was letting him down. This is just a vendor partner of ours. So the burnout thing has become extremely personal. Obviously, burnout is personal, but it has become extremely front and center, because I've been married for 3 weeks. I probably spent 10 hours with my wife, 3 weeks, maybe 8 hours. And now it's how far can I push myself to create this environment for these people that drive me when I am now the product that is depreciating very quickly. Because going to your stress model you talked about there,
eustress.
I think that I have passed I've passed my number, right? Or I've passed my good equilibrium point, and I'm failing. And so now the burnout is a pure battle right now. And so I think that I think that my overall answer to the burnout thing is I know for the first time in my life that I can continue to make sure that we are successful and we keep growing if I just keep going. But the snap point where I would basically become, I'd render myself useless. Yeah, I don't know.
To talk on like where you're at, I mean, you have to be careful there, right? I've talked to some entrepreneurs who have literally run themselves into the hospital with a heart attack because they've just pushed as hard and hard as they can.
We kind of talked about this the other week. Yeah. Luckily I didn't have a heart attack, but
yeah, if you get sick, you end up in the hospital. It's not good for your company. And so it is important to detach from time to time. So this weekend, we're recording this on the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. And as soon as this is wrapped up, I've got one more investor call today, and then I'm going to head home, I'm going to shut my computer, I'm going to turn my work phone off, throw it in a drawer, and it's me, the wife, and the kids for 3 days. No work. And hopefully I'll come out of that rejuvenated, batteries recharged, ready to rock.
How do you do with that process? Are you pretty good at shutting it off?
It's tough for me. So just to give an example, I am a part of an accelerator program, kind of like a Y Combinator. More people are familiar with that.
Yep.
And we are going to wrap the fourth week in June. And during that last week in June, we're supposed to go and do a big pitch event where they're going to bring in their entire group of several hundred investors, and all the companies that are a part of the accelerator cohort are going to come in and have a 30-minute session to pitch for 10 minutes, 20-minute Q&A, and then a big happy hour afterwards for those interested investors to come up and talk with us. That is going to happen on the Wednesday of my 1 week vacation to Corpus Christi with my family. So in the middle of our vacation, when I'm supposed to be detached, I will be getting up in the morning at 5 o'clock, driving to Austin, doing this all day, drinking all night, and then slamming some coffee to sober up and driving back to Corpus so I can be there on Thursday. It's a reality of where I'm at. It's a reality of what we're doing. My wife is understanding and she supports it, but it's tough. It's tough to, you know, book a condo in a beach town for a week and know you have to bail for an entire day. So that's where it's hard to shut things off. But on a day-to-day basis, it's impossible to shut things off, but you try and just say, okay, Saturday from 10 to 5, I'm going to turn it off, and I'm pretty good at managing that.
So I go to therapy on a regular basis to work on my shut-off ability, and I'm going on my fourth year of it, and I can't. I hate that word. I really don't want to say it like that, but...
Can't's a tough one.
I can't. I'm not able to right now. And so that is where my jealousy level raises to the peak, because... I want to take a honeymoon with my wife. And for multiple reasons, she knew that I wouldn't be able to, and she's by far see Jones over here. He knows she's by far the coolest person on the planet for me. And, I can't.
Yeah.
And she knew that. And so she's like, hey, let's do it later in the year. If we can get to a better spot, if we have to wait till next year, whatever it is, like, this isn't a thing of affordability. Like, people out there, like, I understand that that you might have problems affording a wedding or affording a honeymoon or whatever it is. I respect that. There are other affordabilities as well outside of money.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's affording it inside of your brain.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so, that's the thing. You say jealousy because I paint that picture that I am able to shut it off. Quote, I'm doing air quotes with my fingers
or even
for those out
but
there.
Even a little bit is still good though, yeah. If you can.
But what I end up doing is, yeah, I shut it off. I shut the computer down. I'm not doing any actual work. But my brain never stops.
Well, right.
And so all I'm doing is I'm creating more work that I have to do when I come out of that shutdown zone. And so I'm just creating more work for me the next day. But at least it gives me the ability to feign shutting it down and to spend some quality time.
Are you reasonable with the family, though? Are you giving them a reasonable amount of attention? Are you there? Are you at least reasonably present with them?
Yeah, I think I am. You know, my daughter's in swim team, so we're about 2 weeks into that, and it goes all the way through June. And me and my wife split the practices, so I end up at practice with her. And when I'm not at practice with her, I'm at home with our other daughter, hanging out, keeping her occupied while the other ones are at practice. And no questions asked, I am there for dinner every night.
Okay. And during that, though, you feel like, obviously, if you're ruminating on something, like, it can still be there, but do you feel like you're doing a reasonable job of making sure that when they're talking, you're listening, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are very minimal things that you need to do to keep those close to you important, and it's listen. You need to be able to listen. You just need to be able to focus on them for some amount of time. So for my kids, it's I focus on them at dinner. We talk, we figure out what they're doing through the day, what they're excited about for tomorrow. And then at bedtime, I'm not thinking about anything else at bedtime other than getting them ready, sitting down with them, reading a book, maybe playing them the latest Rowan song on Spotify. You know, we do that kind of stuff.
What about Baby Shark?
I hate Baby Shark, but it's definitely
I don't have
part
kids. For those that don't know, I don't have kids, so yeah. I just sing YouTube videos like Baby Shark once in a while.
No, my kids are pretty cool. I can get them to listen to some weird stuff, and they'll get into it.
To the remix of Baby Shark.
I am. Yeah. Okay. So good lesson for everybody out there. So sitting there ruminating on things is difficult, regardless if you have kids. I think I'd be a terrible father right now, because I don't know that I could shut my brain off because I just a billion miles an hour, right? That's my vice. My vice is my ability to solve problems at an extremely fast rate is my niche, right? But that also means that if there are things going on that are out of my control and I'm thinking about them and I know that there are problems that could be solved if I just put time on it, that's where I become not present, even though I'm in the room with somebody else, my wife, friends, whatever it is. Those around me that have seen it, when I'm just not present, might as well just let me go back to work, because then I can at least do something about it and get myself to a point where, and again, that's a personal issue, right? That's my number one battle right now, is being able to get myself to a stoppage point where I can be present with the people around me. And I think that's the key thing for me with this burnout play, mm-hmm. is I have got to get to the point where I can compartmentalize some of it.
Yeah, no, and one of the things that I found that helps with that is kind of having two different speeds, right, at the same time. So
shit, I wish. I want two different speeds.
So at the top end, you know, when I'm looking at the venture as a whole and where we're going and where we need to be, I'm very patient with that, right? Raising, you know, a seven-figure amount of money is going to take time, and so I'm patient there. But when it comes to day-to-day tasks, when it comes to getting on the phone with investors, when it comes to you know, reviewing my projections and making changes, I execute lightning fast. So fast so that some of the people I get involved with get frustrated with me, because if they don't pick up their phone, I'm pissed, right? Why do we have these cell phones if you can't pick it up immediately when I call? That's the whole point.
It's mobile for a reason.
Yeah, it's mobile for a reason, guys. And so, yeah, so I execute at lightning speed on day-to-day tasks, but I'm very patient in the long term. And so that's what allows me to kind of have those detached moments, because I'm patient on that long term. So if I've got my daily activities burnt through, I mean, yesterday I had 27 things on my list of things to do, but I had to go to something in the morning and I didn't get to start actually working until about 11:30. But I crushed 27 to-do items between 11:30 and 3:30, right? I was able to burn through them. And so if you can operate and execute at that clip, then when you do need to detach, it's a little bit easier, because you know when you go back in, even if you've created five more things to do in your head, you know that you can execute quickly. And I think as any entrepreneur, that's something that you really need to work on. You really need to learn how to execute fast. You need to learn how to sell.
On the things that need to be executed.
Right? On the things that need to be executed.
Prioritizing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Delegate when you can. You know, delegating is important. You need to have folks on your team. So these letter of intents that we've talked about that I'm trying to de-risk the investment for, I didn't do anything there. I executed. I created the letter of intent, right? I'm good with contracts, so I drew one up, put our logo on it, put the names on them that I wanted, and I sent my partner five PDFs, said, go get me a letter of intents from these companies. And then I backed off and I let him do it, because that's where his strong suit is. So I can't execute on those. I'm not going to call those guys. I don't know him from John as far as he does. You know, he went to school with these guys. He placed some of them in their jobs, so he's able to go and execute there. So you have to delegate responsibilities to the folks that can. But when it's something that you can do as the CEO, as the founder, as the chief grunt and chief toilet washer of your company, yeah, you've got to execute those things at warp speed.
All right, so I think this conversation went where it needed to go. I think the final thing that, and we're going to probably touch on this for another 100 different podcasts in the future. I think the key thing for people to understand is, and this is specifically, I'll probably get a little angry here in the middle of this. If you notice, this discussion wasn't all about the ideas. It wasn't all about the execution of the idea. What we talked mostly about is the collateral damage. We talked about the things that you give up. Going back to Austin's point about 100 hours so you don't have to work the 40 hours. If you think for a second that you want to be a business owner, want to do your own gig, want to be this quote-unquote entrepreneur, if you think for a second that the conversations, that the majority of your conversations are going to be about your idea about this problem that you're solving, you're in for a rude awakening. What's going to happen is you're going to have to over-communicate with the loved ones and the support system around you on a regular basis to allow you to attain your goal, and you managing the chess pieces That will be your biggest hurdle, no matter what. This, the idea, the processes, all of that. Listen, there are smart people all over the place that can get this stuff done. Okay. The taking the actual risk and being able to communicate with, communicate, delegate, and get the, this is gonna be a funny pun, to get the boat to move. That's the hard part, right? And so, you know, Chris Jones talking about, you know, Fountain Forward, we've never marketed ourselves ever. Okay. How long, you've been working here for 5 months?
Yeah. So it was, December.
Five months. Yeah, okay. Five months. Yeah. 5 months. We've been working on marketing ourselves for a year now, and we're still not to it, and we can't even figure out still yet how we're going to market ourselves, and we're a marketing company. Like
very
just
ironic.
Right, just talking about the actual communication and the it's just like talking about like the grunt work that has to be done to get these to be an entrepreneur. That's what it means, right? And so we're not talking about like, oh, talk to me about more of the features with your software. Like I talked about in the beginning, I just did it because of viability. I want to understand if you were going to be successful or not. It sounded super viable. So like now that I've heard it, I don't know what the competitor information is. I don't know who out there could crush. I don't know who out there could crush you like the cockroach that you are, Mr. Wonderful. I don't know any of those people, right? I don't know any of those competitors. But if you told me the idea and I trust that they're obviously if I was going to invest, I could do the due diligence to find out what was out there or what was not. But we talked about the emotional side, the actual risk factor, and the risk factor didn't just have to do with the money going down. It has to do with your family, the things you have to give up, the compartmentalization that you have to do to be able to spend the weekend in Corpus. I think that if you're thinking about getting into business, especially the young people out there, you should just listen to that. Just think about the fact that that is the number one thing that we are talking about right now, because it's the hardest thing to do. Because the actual like execution of what you're trying to do, like you can find programmers to build your software, you can get in front of people, you can sell it. Like it absolutely. But managing the rest of it, making sure you don't snap, making sure you don't lose your mind, making sure your wife doesn't. I don't mean to like sound freaky to people. Make sure your wife doesn't leave you. Your kids still love you. Like. Dude,
oh yeah, no.
That's the weight here, right?
And I know guys who, in the middle of founding their company, lost their wife, lost their house, lost their kids, ended up in the hospital, and they bounce back. I mean, that's the thing. A true entrepreneur will bounce back.
It might be a different thing.
Who cares? It could be a pivot. It could be something different. But then talking about what you said, like not talking about the product, not talking about what it does, even in front of investors. Like my first conversation with investors is usually, "What have you done? What are you into? Give me some advice on how to be good at my job." You know, you have that relationship with them, and then maybe the money comes up later. But you don't just walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, look, I've got this awesome software product. It does A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, whatever. Give me money." You know, you're not going to build relationships that way, and you're not going to be successful.
What's the number one reason why Gary Vaynerchuk did not invest in Uber? Anybody know the answer?
I know that he passed on it 3 times, and he was like close friends with the CEO.
Correct. Because he didn't think the CEO was going to run it. So think about that. When it comes down to the person that's going to actually call the shots and do the stuff, he did not think that he was going to run it. And that's the number one reason why he passed. So think about that conversation you're having with those VCs, with venture, with private equity guys, etc. That's what they're trying to figure out. Does this guy have that shit, right?
And one of the things that my mentors and advisors have drilled into my head is at this stage of company, pre-revenue, great idea, lots of traction. The investors don't care about that. They're going to say that they care, and they're going to double check that it's there, but they're investing in you. They're investing in me, Austin Evans, as a person, and my team, and my ability to execute. And they know this may not be the successful one, but they're going to see something in me and go, "I'm going to invest in him on this venture. And if it fails, it fails. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I see Austin as being a successful person, so I'm going to invest in him. And maybe the next one's going to pop and make that money."
Two different plans, two different risk factors. I think that there's a lot of value of information that came through this discussion. How many minutes did we go?
39
minutes.
It's going to be a good one. So, longest 452 podcast so far.
Yes, exactly. So
maybe the best.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, wish you the best.
Thank you.
And I hope that everybody out there, if you have questions about these different pathways, the different risk profiles, I think it's important for you to ask. I think it's important for you to admit if you don't know which pathway you want to take, you should ask a question. You should ask people like us. You should contemplate. You should have discussion. The context is where success comes from. You have to talk about it. And conversations like this are how we learn, and we also have empathy. I have a different understanding of Austin's path. And from the discussion with Austin, I now think a little bit differently about my path. I actually have a little bit more gratitude about my own path. So just realize that as you're doing this thing as an entrepreneur, you're going to quickly find out that it's not about you, and that your ability to execute your plan is going to come down to a bunch of other people, specifically those that support you the most on a day-to-day basis. And so that's really what these two different risk paths and this discussion was about at the end of the day. So thank you again, Austin, for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody of the listeners out there want to hit me up, I'm more than welcome to answer questions.
Company name.
The company's Aria Solutions. Sounds like the girl from Game of Thrones, but it's spelled A-R-I-E-H, solutions.com. And you can also hit me up on my DM in Instagram. It's at thatboyatx.
Thatboyatx. Awesome. C. Jones, you want to do your little spiel to end the day here?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks everybody for listening to this week's episode of the 452 Podcast. I think this particular episode definitely provides a ton of value for people. So I hope you all enjoy it and subscribe and download. We're on 9 different platforms. Whatever your favorite one is, I assure you we're on there. So please keep listening, and we'll see you next week on the 452 Podcast.